You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact the VietnamStoryBank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to VietnamStoryBank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded. Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today is so special. If I was like a teenager thinking about like one day I'd be in this seat with you two, been a dream. So today I have Phuc Mập with us. You are coming from, God, everywhere, really.
Right now, Kentucky, but right before that in Florida.
Right on. And I have the King of Little Saigon here, Little Saigon official, Christian.
Queen, Ben. Correct that.
I'm sorry. Guys, Queen of Little Saigon. I hope your wife would feel, feel about that. Have these two guys that are really people who understand the Vietnamese community in the United States so well. And I really want to talk about, you know, the differences and the similarities today. You know, I think it's 2026 and there's a lot going on politically. There's a lot going on culturally. Phuc, you go back to Vietnam quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
Now, today, let's start out with this idea. You know, I've been talking about what does it mean to be Vietnamese for like the last 5-6 years. But my new question is, where do you think Vietnamese culture is evolving here in the United States to?
That's a good question. One thing that I try to promote on my channels is pushing the education of Vietnamese culture and language. Now, part of that is due to demand. A lot of people reach out, a lot of foreign husbands, let's say, who want to learn Vietnamese for their wife and their wife's family. But even more so, I go to these festivals throughout America, for example, Fall Fest in Norcross, Georgia. And I meet all these younger generation Vietnamese, 20, 25, 30, and they say they are so regretful that they didn't learn Vietnamese at a young age, and that their parents send them my videos and say, "Thai sao mi chang nay noi tiếng Việt." You know, and they say they feel embarrassed because they can't talk to their aunts, uncles, and grandparents in Vietnam, but they see me and it encourages them to want to learn more. Now, I never say that I'm fluent or I'm the, you know, the king of Vietnamese of foreigners, not at all, but I use my channel to make it fun, to make it humorous, and to make learning Vietnamese a good time, you know?
Do you feel here in Orange County, people are gravitating towards learning Vietnamese?
Absolutely. So I'm to his point, I came in contact with his content because I go, damn, this dude speaks way better Vietnamese. I was learning words from him, his YouTube videos and also in the IG. So it's exactly what he says. Like, I grew up here not speaking much Vietnamese. And I went to a little bit of Vietnamese school as a kid, but then like in your teenage and adult life, you just kind of forgot it. Mm-hmm. I mean, for probably 5 years, I didn't spoke zero Vietnamese. Then now recently, I didn't know, probably 80% of the stuff he was teaching on there, I did not know.
Wow.
Pronunciation wise, I learned from a white guy, you know,
for
meaning I learned from this guy, you know, and other people like him. So, and you know, there's a bit of a shame. And let's just be real, shame from the parents, shame from me, where like you kind of just kind of left it behind. You know what I mean? And then now to admit that I have to learn from somebody else because I talk to other Vietnamese, they're not trying to teach me. They try to correct me. You know what I mean? But teaching me is different from correcting me. You know what I mean?
You know, my biggest question is if you look at the fourth, fifth generation Japanese, all gone.
All gone.
For the most part. Is that going to happen to the Vietnamese community?
I hope not.
I feel it's not happening because of the last 3 years where I see so many kids are now trying to dig into their roots. And it might be the food scene, whatever, but like just case in point, the last two Tet, I see more kids go shopping for Aoyai by themselves.
Mm.
Okay. And they rock it and all their friends are going to go buy it with them. And you've never seen that here.
Really?
Never have you seen them independently not being forced to do something cultural. They want to do it themselves.
Reconnect with the roots.
Okay, so whatever that means, and that whatever, however that transpired, you know what I mean? It's like somehow they're reaching into like they're wanting to learn. they're reaching out. They're asking the questions. They're saying, is this real? Is this like this, right? And then the words that he teach, and then what you give the backstory of who did that first and who's a game changer in certain industries. They're very interested, like, okay, wow, I didn't know that guy was that guy or that person, that girl that did this.
Yeah, I think we have like the benefit these days of the internet, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Think about like 80 years ago, the Japanese had the internment camps, or, you know, way before, you know, in the 40s. And there was no internet. You couldn't feel the pride of your ethnicity. You're like living in shame and fear as well.
I can't speak for all the Japanese, but let's see. I talked to the Japanese. He goes, like, his parents said, like, after the internment camp, a lot of them had that fear of that's going to happen again. So they try to acclimate faster.
Right.
You know, like, just fit into the fabric things. Be white. And he goes, and then their parents say, at an older age, they regretted that.
Oh my God. Yeah. So this is such good news. I'm so
you know what I mean?
To
you
hear this.
And I see that with Vietnamese where I talked to a lot of parents as well. And, you know, I said, oh, con go to Việt, nothing at home. And they say, no, they say, I'm American. I'm here in America. I was born here. I don't need to speak Vietnamese, speak English. And that's the sad part where they come to regret that 20 years later.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Understand. We're here to tell you, your younger self, you will regret it if you don't pick it up.
Yeah. Well, you didn't think it was necessary.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's like, just like an education in school. I didn't think math was necessary. I didn't think, you know, political science, anything was necessary. You're like, oh, I'm just going to go work. Why is that necessary? Well,
and I see that from my experience. I taught English for 8 years in Vietnam, and I had the opportunity to be at the same language center for all 8 years. Oh. So I taught kids from 6 and 7 all the way up to 14, 15, to where now they're requesting, oh, can you write me a recommendation letter for this university in Germany or Canada or whatever? And I'm happy to, because I got to see the progress in those kids. But I bring that up because the same classes, you have kids that went from just being basic phonics to fluent in 8 years, and other kids who never learned a thing. Why? Because they didn't want to. They're in the same class with the same teacher, but they still couldn't carry a conversation 8 years later because they didn't want to. So what it comes down to, in my experience, is the motivation.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I say this with a lot of other Chom Thai that are married to Vietnamese girls. They say, oh, I wish I could speak Vietnamese so I could talk to my mother-in-law. I'm like, well, you can. There's enough resources. I used to sit down with two different tutors in the same week and study.
You gotta really want
to tell. Yeah, because I wanted to communicate with my wife's gigantic family. And luckily, I did, because I lived with them for years in Vietnam and here. So it's like, if I didn't speak Vietnamese, that would have been a very boring relationship.
Mm. And it's people like me, I speak Vietnamese, but I can't speak adult conversational Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. I speak street slang Vietnamese. And so when you speak to an adult, I'm afraid to offend them, because I always say, a curse word blurts out, or some sort of street slang, or, you know, and I catch myself doing it. But so when I'm sitting across an adult, those conversations, so I'm very limited to my conversation.
Even if you put the sensor on, you're still wearing Café du Mat
shirt.
Come on now.
You know,
no.
In your 8 years, how do you think people are motivated? What is the engine of motivation? Because I want to apply that to my children. I want to apply it to the audience that lacking that fire.
Well, with the English, it was success. You know what I mean? They know that if they do great on the IELTS test in Vietnam, they have opportunities to go work and study abroad. If they don't, then they might be stuck in Vietnam. And to some people, that's a bad thing. Some people, that's a good thing. But the point is, it gives them more opportunity to get out and do things. Whereas me, as a foreigner, you know, you can live in Vietnam and not speak a lick of Vietnamese.
Sure. Yeah.
I have friends, 10, 15 years, married to a Vietnamese girl, mixed kids, work in Vietnam, yet they don't speak any Vietnamese. I'm like, how you been here that long and you're not even concerned with having a conversation with the lady that sells things outside of your building? You know what I mean?
But, you know, I think there is some truth to, like, you know, taste buds. There's like, if you think about taste buds, there's like, I'd say, let's just say there's 3,000 buds on your, but some people only have 1,500. Some people might have 4,500. I'm just making numbers up, right? So the ability to taste, or the ability to receive words for somebody like you, might be on the higher spectrum, right?
For sure.
So if you're on the lower spectrum and you got like no taste buds, you got no hearing capacity, you know, you might not be really into the learning of it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You're looking like you're connecting with what I'm saying.
I do. No, it's like there's like he says, there's different motivations, different levels of motivation.
The first 2 weeks in Vietnam, my TESOL program came with a free 2-week Vietnamese course with a college professor who knows how to teach it. And I sat there looking at that board with the tones and I'm like, I'm never going to be able to learn this. Like, I just did not have the interest. And then, of course, I met my wife and I met my wife's mom very soon after. And then that motivation hit, like, I don't want her family looking down on me. If I marry this girl, like, I need to be able to communicate with them and I need to make them proud, if you will. Now, some would say I took that a bit too far and made videos in Vietnam and put myself out there way too much. But I mean, if they're embarrassed of me, they hide it very well. So
just being you, right?
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to take a quick left turn, like completely moving out of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little bit scary, but, so Kentucky and Florida.
Yeah.
When I think about Kentucky and Florida, I think about, you know, I think about some really white people. I think about you just really blending in with this, you know.
You'd be surprised. My favorite part is when I first went there, you know, my wife, we waited for her green card for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, the goal was to get her citizenship. The lockdown in Vietnam was so bad with COVID. I said, if this happens again, I want her to have the ability to leave with me to America and ride it out. Because during COVID, I could have left, but she was stuck there and I couldn't leave my wife. So I stayed all 3 years of quarantine. And with that, you know, when we got over here, her brother has a nail salon in Kentucky. Because I don't know if you guys realize, but some Vietnamese do nails.
Yeah.
So he said, why don't y'all come here and help me out? And I said, well, she knows how to do nails. What the heck am I going to do? He said, you have to translate. My nail techs, they don't speak English.
Wow.
So I was like, all right. I edit YouTube videos. I translate for the nail techs and do all the behind the scenes. And it's so funny because those Mei Chang in Kentucky, they go, why you speak the Chinese? How you know that Chinese? Well, it's Vietnamese.
How you know that Oriental?
And over and over. It was just.
They still call us Oriental?
No, I haven't heard that. But it's usually Chinese. But, but then now my brother-in-law has a restaurant. So when I'm in Kentucky, I help him with the Vietnamese restaurant. And again, that demographic, the majority have never had Vietnamese food.
Yeah,
they say, so it's like ramen, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, it's a noodle, you know.
You got that egg foo young?
Yeah. So it's cool in terms of an ambassador role where I get to introduce and I get to like say, well, actually, you know, the food, it comes from Vietnam. It's very fresh. It has noodles. And I explain everything and the reaction's been good. But yes, Kentucky, that's a whole nother level. Florida, there's a lot of Vietnamese, but yeah. Kentucky, there's not too many.
You know, both of you share this gene of being ambassadors for the Vietnamese culture.
Are we?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. What drives you guys?
I had an article about me from Yen Chi magazine in Vietnam in like 2021, 2022 that called me the unofficial ambassador of tourism. And I was very honored to see that where they made a whole article with me and Vietnam meets Dustin and just like these foreigners are sharing our culture in a positive way to the rest of the world. And then I kind of just took that upon myself like, hey, you know, what if I started teaching Vietnamese in a fun way? What if I went from teaching English and just shared even more about Vietnamese culture? And that's really pushed me over the last, 5 years?
Yeah, but what drives you both to push Vietnamese? Because you could be pushing Kentucky culture, Florida culture, right? But why Vietnamese culture? And why, for you too, Chris, why is this important to both of you?
You start.
Well, you know, I grew up with a bunch of people that's complacent about where they grew up and how they grew up. And there's a lot of them, just like me, they kind of left this behind. And there's a lot of, let's say my age group, there wasn't that many people speaking. And I've read books and articles from third-party accounts that was, you know, referenced to people that didn't even live here. And so there's many stories from 75 till now that doesn't have much like detail and truth to it. And seeing more and more a bunch of things that came before this that led up to certain things that are happening now needs to be said. I'm not saying they're pioneers, but they're risk takers. You know what I mean? They're game changers. They're people that were important at the period of 80s and 90s and 2000. Like case in point, like New Wave era. Everybody wants to talk about it, but nobody can pinpoint that. You know, there's a documentary, but they're featuring singers that were emulating the streets. Okay. New wave culture was all street culture. That was truly what Vietnamese street culture was. And then now you got entertainers mimicking it, but then they're now the explanation of it. How can that be?
Yeah, which is just one angle.
Yeah, it's just like Hollywood telling you how this is how it was when they didn't get it, but now you look at the actors, the one that lived it. So how do you? I don't know. I mean, not that's not true. I mean, they sang about it, they embodied it, but it came from the street.
Right.
It was grown from the street, from the car culture, fashion, and being a rebel and being not accepted in America and making their own way. Years later, you know, now that was part of the 80s and 90s identity. So you have to tackle the street part of it to really get to the root of what New Wave was.
So the reason that you're motivated is because nobody's covered sort of the real...
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the real, you know what I mean?
Real, okay.
Okay, like even food, music, fashion, cars, and why people do business, what motivates them, what motivates them to not do anything with their community, what motivates them to stay in their community. Because we always talk about bubble and time capsules and people like, oh, you know, you meet people that... outside here, even though they're Vietnamese and they grew up here and they moved away, it's still a mystery of how things get done. You know what I mean? You know, and let's unlock certain mysteries and myths. You know what I mean?
Is it a myth to you how we do shit here in Orange County?
I'm always figuring out something new every time I call. Like what? Well, for example, like my cousin, she's like talking about different restaurants. She's like, hey, you know, when other Vietnamese come here, they say this place is good, whatever. She said, no.
Yeah.
This one's good. You need to go to this one. And I know that's like a base level food thing. But for me, I didn't know a lot about the history of Little Saigon and the refugees until moving to Vietnam and then coming to explore the communities here. So
it's very different, right?
Very different.
Because you come from a new wave of Vietnamese.
Right. Where it's like, you know, even my father, he was 17 in 1975. So he wasn't even eligible to go to the war. So that was very distant, but he was always very straight up with me. You know, he said that war was like a civil war with Vietnam and we got involved because America likes to stick their nose into things and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, so that was my thing. But, you know, going to Vietnam and then coming here and seeing, you know, two sides, because part of it, you know, you look at my father-in-law, he flew planes for the South. But he's Bac Nam Tu. He's from the north, you know? And I had another aunt who was on the boats and she had a baby in Indonesia while she was in a refugee camp. Yeah. So it's like, I see all these different points of view. And every time I come back here or I go explore a Vietnamese community, I find out more. But on the point, we're talking about like what drives. In the beginning, you know, my wife and one of my friends in Vietnam, they said, hey, why don't you start a YouTube channel? Yeah. You know, this niche is not really opened up. You know, there were two other foreign YouTubers who had a channel speaking Vietnamese mm-hmm. with comedy. I don't know if you know who they are. One guy got in a lot of trouble for a Facebook comment, basically got kicked out of Vietnam, lost his channel. The other guy is still my buddy. But I told my wife's family, I said, if I do it, like, I want to be the best. Like, I want everyone to know who I am. Like, I'm going to push it out there. Keep it positive. I'm not going to sit there and criticize restaurants, cultural aspects, whatever. Keep it funny. And to this day, it's almost like a motivation where it's like, hey, every time I put out a viral video or do something else, or you'll get the motivation of someone coming up to me and say, hey, I appreciate what you do. Like that text you sent me earlier.
Yeah. And that was real. Like it just came that moment I was texting with you. Somebody just randomly texted me, hey, man, this guy Fugmup, I know you. He helped my husband.
Wow.
You know, like
this was this morning.
Yeah,
somebody else came up and said, hey, I shared your videos with a family member to get them ready to move to Vietnam. And it helped them so much. Thank you. So every time I receive like a compliment or something like that, it drives me more to say, hey, you know, like, for example, one of my IELTS students asked me why I do it. And I said, you know, in the end, obviously rich and famous, it sounds great. But in the end, I just want Vietnamese across the world. If someone comes up and say, hey, do you know a foreigner who speaks your language, knows about your culture?
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, that guy Phuc Mop. You know, that's what I want. Where it's not like, oh, that Katang Phuc Mop nay. Not like me. No, just either a fan or just, you know, neutral. But like, yeah, that guy Phuc Mop, he does good things for the culture.
The
end, that's what I want it to be, where it's like he helped out. You know?
Do you ever get haters who say you've co-opted the Vietnamese culture, you're a white savior? Do you ever get that shit?
I have before. But
how do you feel about that?
I've kind of labeled it down. And I had a chat with you guys know Lun from Fobosa?
Yeah.
We had a chat about this one of the times I was here. And the groupings, you have...
Totally my face.
You have husbands of Vietnamese people, right? And I've had husbands come up and say this. Where they're Vietnamese wives, they'll say, why can't you be more like Phuc Mop and learn my language? And no guy wants to hear, why can't you be more like this guy?
We grew up with that whole comparison. Why don't you be like more like...
Yes. So that's one group. Another group, it seems, are like Viet Kieu who live here and they see like, oh, Katang Mi Chang Nai, nothing Viet Giỏi hơn mình. And my parents say this and say that. And it's almost like a jealousy thing where it's like, well, F this guy, he gets recognition in Vietnam. He does TV and gets articles and stuff. And then I can't even speak my own language. And I think that's the other group. So, and then obviously you have both sides where if I, you know, do something in Vietnam, people here who don't like Vietnam say something about it. Or if I do something here, people in Vietnam, like, why is he
you can't win
over here with everybody? And, you know, so it's like, I think that pretty much lumps up the haters. But if you look at my YouTube statistics, it's usually 97, 98% likes. So even the comedy videos that might be over the top, I still only get like 1 or 2% dislikes.
So, so you're doing good overall.
I feel that way, yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate the work that you do.
I appreciate that work you do. I got friends that appreciate it. I mean, like I said, the comments that came in, even the last time you visit here, that's when I discovered how many people here and within a certain demographics that actually follow. I go, wow, this guy's actually pretty big over here. And it's the same deal, exactly what we explained. You know, they live a... They're like, how come I don't speak that way?
Right.
How come I can't communicate that way? You know, and it's being stuck the same way, you know, like even like what motivates me, like when I started this brand, it was supposed to be faceless, but then I found out nobody's representing that particular part. So how can it be faceless anymore? You know what I mean? And nobody wanted, same thing. Nobody wanted to speak up and neither did I, but then that's the problem. And so,
right.
And because, you know, also I was embarrassed because I couldn't speak Vietnamese. How am I going to represent being Vietnamese? Yes.
And everything and be an ambassador for it when...
But my Vietnamese is so chopped. You know what I mean? It's like, it's broken. So there's broken English and there's broken Vietnamese.
Right.
Okay. So on one hand, you got all these comedy guys making fun of how we used to speak in the 80s and 90s and killing it. But then let's do one about how we speak Vietnamese all fucked up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Kong Mong Bik Di Dao O Ka Mong. You know, it's like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? That's even funnier than the fucking English version shit. You know what I mean?
For me, like, that was one thing. And again, my wife has been a cultural ambassador for me from the beginning of like, hey, don't do this. Mm-hmm. I've made videos and she said, do not put that out. They will cancel you. In Vietnam,
oh, do not want to. Busting on guys like him?
No, not like that. I'll give you an example. There was a sex tape that leaked in Vietnam. Hilton, Kim Kardashian, like actress level.
Yeah.
I had a whole parody planned out and I was going to make a whole thing on it. Yeah. That would be funny.
Yeah.
And she stopped. She said, do not. They will cancel you. They will hate you because they don't treat that. They feel bad for that girl for getting her sex tape leaked. Whereas here, we look at Kim K and Paris Hilton.
They did
it on purpose. Yeah. So to make a parody is like...
He's planned.
But she's stopped me a few times. But one of the things that she did encourage me in the beginning, and this I feel has really pushed my channel and kept it relevant, if you will.
Yeah.
She goes, whatever you do, don't change your voice. Sound like an American who just speaks more and more Vietnamese. Because if you sound like a local and you sound fluent, people go, wow, that's so good. And then they get bored with you and they stop watching. And it's happened. There's plenty of foreigners in Vietnam who speak way better than I do. They sound like locals. I never want to sound like that. I want to be like,
this is like an affect.
This has been since like 2019. She goes, you're going to learn more. You're going to get better grammar structures, more vocab, but do not sound like a local Vietnamese because people will get bored of your style. You're funny. You sound weird. And so I've done that from the beginning where I just sling my voice and, you know, I would say it's still relevant. I still get views, you know?
So basically, I can just embrace how I have broken Vietnamese and just run with it and that's just be my character.
Yeah.
Hello.
The moral of the story is just to be comfortable with whoever you are.
Yeah.
Oh, Bang Ken, Bang Phuk. That's kidding. Dude. Yeah, I don't think I can go 5 minutes speaking Vietnamese entirely.
So I use one of my TV shows as an example for my IELTS.
I think I'm going to try it one day.
Where I say, you know, you have to fake it till you make it. You have to act like you know more than you do. The first big show I went on was called Ai La So Mot with Chung Yang in Vietnam. It's a game show. And five celebrity guests, they had to talk to five foreigners, interview us. We had to do like a thing. And they have to guess who's been in Vietnam the longest. Mm. They guessed that I was, but I was really in fourth place. There was a girl who'd been there like 20 years, a guy that had been there like 16 years, studied in college there. But why did I get it? Because I acted like there was no pressure. I used slang. I was making jokes. Like Chung Yang, he picks up, they gave me the whole gan and everything. I'm walking around like I'm, you know, selling ban cheng chon and everything. And he picks up this vegetable. He goes, oh, de la rau yian. I don't know what vegetable was. So I took it. I go, rau thơm. Throw it back down. And they're like, oh, this guy, he's quit. Okay. And I technically won the show. There was no prize. But, and that all came from like, oh, there is no pressure. Even though all of Vietnam's watching me, judging my Vietnamese, I know how I sound. I just run with it, have fun, and I won the game show, you know?
Yeah.
This is a problem that I have personally. And I know that Chris has not been to Vietnam, but this is a problem that I have. I dream of Vietnam every waking moment of my life. I'm not saying that I live a bad life here, but, you know, the U.S. has gotten a little bit trippy, right?
Yeah.
How do you feel about living in Vietnam and the U.S.? If you had a choice?
Well, I got a lot of heat for this. So we got to be careful how we answer this one.
Yeah.
So, you guys know?
All right.
You guys familiar with Đại Hội Thanh Mao?
Yeah, Missouri.
Yes, Missouri.
So have you been?
Marion Day?
Yeah.
No. I've been, but I haven't been.
I've been I was a kid, like maybe 5 times.
Yeah. So I'm not Vietnamese, if you couldn't tell. I'm not Catholic, if you couldn't tell. But I drove out there from Kentucky. 8 hours by myself. Slept in the van in a campground because all the hotels are booked out. People kept inviting me. I was like, you know what? I'm going to check this out. So I go out there. Man, I mean, everyone was so friendly. I mean, you watch my videos. I had like 6 videos from there. Even the father, the cha at the nhà thờ.
Knew
Phúc Mạc. Yeah. And he goes, hey, Phúc, come up here. And he brought me on the roof with the FBI snipers because they paid $250,000 for police and FBI.
Oh, so interesting.
And he's like, get all the video you want up here. Like, you know, and you can watch my video. I'm up there with the Insta360. But the point is, everything was great. And then this one guy comes up and he's like, hey, can I interview you? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I was doing all kinds of interviews. I'm the only white guy at this whole thing. And he said, yeah, my channel is Cuộc Sống, blah, 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 Mỹ. So I thought it was like a family channel. Well, it turns out this guy is not loved by people in Vietnam. He says a lot of bad things. Yeah. He says a lot of bad things about Vietnam. So people hate him. I didn't know. Never seen
it on his show.
But I made his audience mad because he said, you know, what's better? Do you like life in Vietnam or life in America? I said, I like life in Vietnam. It's more chill. People are happier. Everybody's more relaxed and they may have less, but they're happier as a community. Here in America, we're bickering. We're not one people. You know, it's like we don't come together as a community. And it's very tense with politics and society's issues. So yeah, I think life in Vietnam is better. I got so much hate for that.
You got crucified by the Vietnamese community?
Here.
Yeah.
The people in Vietnam, they loved it. They were making reaction videos like crazy.
I went on Sean Lay's show and I said, Vietnam Sung Hung, right? Sung Lam? Dude, that was like the caption. I swear it's like 4,000 comments that are roasting me on Sean Lay's thing. Yeah.
They don't, I get it. You know, it's a different experience if you were there 50 years ago and had to flee.
You lost everything.
I'm not sitting here, you know, trying to demote your experience, whatever, because like I said, my family's been through that. But for me, my time in Vietnam, I loved it. And they're like, oh, because they love you because you're white. No, like I took the time to learn the language and I talk to locals and I do what I do and I get respect for that. And I have a great time in Vietnam. And at least in my experience, they don't bicker about politics and things like we do here.
Because they can't. That's what the people say.
That's fine.
It's a party system. People don't talk.
That's fine. That's its own problem in itself. But yet that doesn't exist in the culture like it does here. Whereas like if I go and post a pro-Republican or pro-Democrat on my profile now, half my audience, regardless of what I post. So it's like, I like that over there where people don't, that's not something you bicker about.
Think about this, guys. I just talked to my buddy Chef Nguyen the other night and he's like, this is how crazy it is. Let's say every one of us is programmed with like 8 to 10 things that are like hardline. There's no, you can't.
No compromise.
No compromise, right? But how do I know you are carrying 1 or 2 things that I will burn you down for?
Yeah.
Or you got 3 things. All it takes is just one
slip.
Detail slip.
Yep.
And you and I are done. Our polarization in the United States, we're completely done. Think about how scary it is now that we're living, because I don't know, you might be carrying some like weird Republican
leanings
or I might be carrying some really like really heavy liberal communist tendency, right? That's just like unacceptable to you. We are just 1 point away from like cutting each other off.
Right. Yep. And that's what
this is America.
That's the point I made. I said, you know, why is Tại sao mọi người ở Mỹ chấm cảm quá? Why is everybody so depressed? If this country's so great and we have so much money and we're so developed, why is suicide rate high? Why is everyone depressed here? Where in Vietnam, I'm not saying there aren't depressed people, but they have less, and they go out to nyao after work, and they have a good time. Families stay together. They all live in the same house. And here, at 17, I didn't even have a bad family life. But at 17, I'm like, yo, I'm in college. Peace. I'm out. Well, I didn't want to live at home
anymore. You don't come home.
Yeah.
You don't come home. Like, how many people are 3-4 generations living together in America?
And this is what changed my view is when I met my wife. We met, she was 28, still lived at home, had to be home before midnight. And I'm like, wait, we got to be home for midnight? And she's like, yeah, my brother and sister will tell my mom and dad in America I'll get in trouble. And she could not live with me until we got married. And I said, you know, if I had a daughter in the future, that's how I would want her raised. That I had so much more respect for the culture. And I saw how the family structure was and everything. So there's a lot of aspects of Vietnam that I just think are better than here. We could learn from them. You know?
Yeah, that's what I've seen, too. Like the family value and the structure of how being a conservative family value. Like on which side of the world are you talking about here? You know what I mean? Like the U.S. conservative family value versus other countries' family value is what he's talking about. And if you use that definition, it doesn't even apply here. No, here,
putting your mom in a home
isn't
really a thing in Vietnam. You can't put your mom, you put her in your home, you know?
Like, you cannot do that.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's just different how the outlook of what you guys, you know, people view as value, right?
Yeah. And I told that to my mom. I'm like, hey, you better be happy I got into this Vietnamese culture because there's less chance of me putting you in a home later. Like, she didn't like that.
And it's true. Like us, like, you know, I would totally, you know, take care of my parents until the end of the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't have no shame. If I need to wipe somebody's ass, I'll do it. You know what I mean? And if I can afford it, I would have them come to me and still care for them like they care for me. So there's a difference where I grew up, people like, oh man, they're trying to find them a nice leisure world home. So that way they don't have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then that's not it. We want to deal with it.
One of my uncles asked me why America is so individualistic, where we just care about ourselves. And even with the family itself, it's like, deal with your own problems. Whereas in Vietnam, I've seen, let's say in my wife's family, like 7 brothers and sisters on one side.
Communal problems.
Yeah. If somebody goes to the hospital, they all pitch in to pay the medical bill, you know? Like,
it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's why even like series like Gum Yadin, okay? How many actually families sit and eat together nowadays? Like
Zero.
Okay. If you ask most people now, when did you stop eating family dinners? Okay. And it'd be such a big thing, like in America. Okay. And that used to be family dinners. That, why do you think you have a dinner table? You know, you have a dining room. Nobody cares about the dining room now. It's like, that's only a place to host. You know what I mean? And so that changed over time. And
we are living in a dangerously fractured society in America.
Well,
I agree.
Dangerously fractured. And I think because it's so fractured on the nuclear family level, how can we expect society to be joined and united, right?
No. That's why you run to your own tribe.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, within our own tribe, like I said, it just takes that one issue that I discovered about you.
Yeah.
It's
not, no alignment.
Abortion. All right, I'm done.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like I'm done. I can't even like have a conversation with you anymore. Like that disgusts me, right? And that is like mind-blowing to think about. We can't deal with like the gray areas anymore. We can't deal with nuances anymore. We're like shut down from all of it.
I think our tolerance level is less with other people. Our patience with other people is less.
Gone.
It's gone. You know what I mean? Where like, dude, just relax, dude. You know what I mean? It's not that serious.
Yep.
But then again, you can say, no, that's conviction. That's what he believes. He stands on that, you know, and then there goes again. So you were taught all these things to stand on what you believe in. But then if that opposition doesn't stand on it, you shouldn't fuck with him.
Yeah.
And Vietnam, you're like,
they just brush it off like,
don't
you hear? Some shit like that, right?
But you don't get that in American society.
Right.
Fuck him.
Yeah.
Like, tear that mugger down.
Well, we just say, oh, man, the dude ain't right. Just let him go. he ain't right, man. You know, he's on meds, bro. Oh, he's raised that way. Whatever, you know what I mean?
I understand everybody has emotions to a point, but I look at it like, you're a grown man, I'm a grown man. I believe what I believe for a reason. I know why I believe it. So if you believe something else, you're not going to convince me against my view, and I'm pretty sure I'm not going to convince you against your view. So it is what it is.
Yeah,
we do the same thing, you know what I mean? But a lot of society, because of the social media influence, where you're put in your bubble and you think everyone's on your side, and then the other side is so crazy that you just can't put up with it. But in reality, it's like if you're a grown adult, you know what you believe, and then that's it. someone else differs, oh well, you know.
God, I hope Vietnam doesn't change like America. You know, that's the scary part about Vietnam.
The thing is, everything changes.
Everything changes, yeah. But I want to live there eventually. I want to, like, retire there. I want to, you know.
So do I. You know, I think, and the way I see things here, like I look at all the older folks, you know what I mean? They have to find a place that accepts them to go. Or they're just home gardening now. They're isolated. They're, you know, just living out their days, right? Instead of
living.
Yeah.
Instead of living. You're living out your days here. You're like trying to just survive.
My friend's parents finally went back to Vietnam 2 years ago. His dad was so nervous about going back. And he said that the second day he was back, it's almost like he took back 10 years.
Wow.
Okay, he goes, and it was a transformation. He went out, walked around, drank coffee with friends, and visited. He walked everywhere. But he was in Louisiana. He just stayed in his house, watched TV, YouTube, and went out and watered his plants, went back and do the same thing. So the routine was just a couple paces back and forth. But when he was in Vietnam for 3 weeks, he was not even home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're out.
Even before the YouTube channel, I would just walk through the alleys around my house, start conversations with random Vietnamese. And they're like, oh, tại sao lại sống ở Việt Nam? Tại sao biết nói tiếng Việt? Có người yêu chưa? Like, it was just always, you know, interesting and having different conversations. With 10 million people in Saigon, you can always have that. Whereas you take a 10 million people city here, you go to New York and try to start random conversations with people in the street. It's not going to happen.
No way. No.
But Saigon, I rarely, if ever, had a bad experience approaching somebody and just starting a random conversation. Even the Yang Ho looking guys with the tattoos, okay. You know, it's like they just want to chat.
Yeah, they just want to chat.
Ever seen those cholos in Vietnam?
Yeah, the Viet Monsters.
I made a video.
Yeah, they're
okay, so you know those guys, right?
Yeah, the Chicano ones. Yeah. Okay.
Look at those guys. They got the pit bulls. They got the whole like setup, right? And then you go and you talk to them, and they're like the most polite human beings.
So chill
guys, and I'm like, this is crazy.
No. You know? I was shocked, like, because I had the same thing when I went there. You know Gal Viet up in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Him and I went there. And the owner and his main manager, they're like, oh, you want to sit down for an interview? I was like, yeah, sure. And I sit down with them. And they're all tatted up and cholo looking. And they were the nicest guys. And he pulled me to side off camera. And he gave me all this advice for my YouTube channel, how to run it like a business. Like, first time meeting. And I felt like, you know, best friends.
Yeah.
Like the most chill guys ever, you know?
That's what we got to bring back, is just kind of that sentiment. Like, people are hostile, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll even be honest. Like, I lived here. Like, when I first got to this area and I was just going around, I was telling, you know, Dana there, I go, I walked to 10 shops, 8 of them hostile to me. And this is today, where I'm actually trying to give them free promos. I go, hello, y'all back? You know, they're on guard. I get it, you know, everybody's suspect, you know what I mean? And maybe because of the way I look or how I approach them, but still, they're not hospitable.
Right.
And especially being in a tourist area where you don't show any kind of hospitality, you know, not even a greeting, like, how you doing, you know, help, you know, feel it out, you know, but their first thing is on guard. You know, like, no, I'm just saying hi. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm going to move into a new chapter here, because I think the new wave of like Vietnamese people coming from Vietnam, not the boat people, not the HO people, not the ODP people. I think the new people that are coming from a different economic background coming to America, it is changing the face of Orange County and all the Vietnamese communities in the United States. And I don't know if you both probably live in the experience of bumping into new kids that are Du Học Sinh or, you know, international students.
Oh, I love talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
I love talking to them because, like, they tell me, because I'm curious and they're curious.
Yeah,
because they had this idea before they came here, and what the reality is, I'm curious about what their ideas were before they got here. You know, yeah. So yeah,
it's an exciting time to be Vietnamese American.
Oh, absolutely, man.
Of like these young people that are coming, or new families that are like really well to do in Vietnam, and they're coming here like, you guys are living in like the Stone Ages, you know, like.
Well, and they come here with like a checklist of stuff that they've been looking on YouTube and stuff, and they're so curious, like the car scene. Okay, you know what I mean?
Can I talk to
you? Yeah, go do your thing, man.
My wife first came to Vietnam to America in 2022. I said, well, you're here. First time for her. And I look at it as like, I had so many new experiences in Vietnam and she got to show it to me. I said, well, you're here now. What do you want to do? She goes, can we go to Walmart? I saw it on TikTok. I said, I love Walmart. Let's go. And that, to her, that was the coolest thing, to go into a Walmart and be like, dang, like everything here. And it's cheaper than some of the supermarkets in Vietnam, because Walmart is Walmart. But I thought that was so cool from her perspective to be like, I saw it on TikTok.
You know what? As a kid, Kmart was like Disneyland to me. Mm-hmm. Let's be real. You know, I was like, ah, oh. You know what I mean? See blue light special, lights going on, toy aisles, candy aisles. Okay. As a poor kid, you didn't get go to these things. And when you did, it's like a, it's a, you know what I mean? And they sell food there. I got an icy.
Everything you need.
I can't wait to see the blending of all of the cultures of the new wave of Vietnamese people, the old Vietnamese people here blending. Because it ain't blending yet.
No, but that's why it takes channels like ourselves and to tell all the Vietnamese wherever you come from, open up. You have a place to have this conversation. You have a place where we can share content. We have a place where we can understand each other. You know, if you're from Australia, you're from Vietnam, you're from that side, Norway, you're from Kentucky, you know what I mean? And you're from BF, I don't know where the hell you're from, but anyway.
I just made a clip this morning about the flags.
I saw that.
I saw that.
Man, I came to this realization. I was looking at, I think it's Wynn Dynasty Company. Shout out to the guy who makes that, some young.
Yeah, Jason. What's up, man? Jason? Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to Jason, man. He did one with his girlfriend. And he's like, wanted to show his girlfriend. And they were like traveling in Vietnam. And a big ass red flag with the yellow star. And Jason's American born, right?
He's and he doesn't know those politics either.
Like, thousands and thousands of views, and I'm watching his channel grow, and just the quality of his videos, right? Not giving a rat's ass about this red flag, yellow star, right? And I'm thinking, how many hundreds more of Jason's
lots
like Chris Tran Travels and all these guys.
Amy just had one as well. She had a whole thing. Lovely Mimi. She's like, I didn't know. Nobody's ever told me about this. All I see is you're Vietnamese. We're all Vietnamese,
and that's how it should be.
Social
media. That's how it should be.
Content creators are going to just start fucking pummeling the internet with this red flag. And it's just like that. What I realize is this, the tides are going to like quickly change now. It's done.
Yeah.
When a kid like Jason puts that flag up and nobody bats an eye. We're 51 years in. And then you and I are like, all like worried about this shit.
Well, we have to be, because we're like,
so,
you know, 5-10 years ago, we get protested.
Yeah.
You get ostracized. No company house.
You believe it?
Yeah.
Come your house.
And then somebody had asked me, you know, from time to time, I always get this conversation. They go, how do you see that? I go, if I look at our culture as our parents got divorced, okay, our country.
Yep.
Okay. Flags of my father, mother, land of my mother, right? And then, yes. And now the siblings are split. Am I still not able to talk to my siblings at one time, you know, hey, what's up? Even if now my dad has different kids with my mom has different kids, we're still all connected. We're still fucking family. And so I go, yeah, at one time there was a fight. There was a divorce. Two different people could not live with each other any longer. But it doesn't mean their kids can't live with each other.
But the white guy can get away with it.
Well,
right? Well, he started it and he can end it.
Going back to the Marian days, I tell people, don't insert me into your politics, because, you know, with me.
Right now,
you're in, man. Hey, come sit in the middle.
Like you said, you know, Vietnamese here, you're Vietnamese there. To me, Vietnamese in Vietnam and Vietnamese here have always been hospitable and friendly.
Yeah.
So I don't pick a side on that, you know, like, oh, no, I only talk to this side. Like, no, everybody's friendly. But at the same time, don't paint me on one side or the other.
No.
I'm just here to help spread culture in general and language and food and everything else. And
dude,
a lot of people try to insert me. So I feel like this is more of a conversation for you gentlemen, because you are in the middle of it.
It is. Because like I tell people, like, why I do this, I go, it's culture over politics. Okay, that's it. You know what I mean? That's why politics isn't trying to be doing ads and having stuff. I go, no, if it's about culture, it's about culture. How do we, a culture is built and added to, right? Politics is whatever you fucking deem best for yourself. You know, so whatever you want to do, you do. But for myself, it's culture.
Yeah.
Okay, music, fashion, food. How do you want to be living? And that's it.
But there is residue in people our age that when you go back to Vietnam and you see that red flag, like in person, like all on the streets, it'll do something to you, right? And you have to, like, I think internally you have to recalibrate how you know, I took people that were my age back to Vietnam for the first time, you know, 2 years ago. And all these friends were first timers and they were like 52, 53. And they were just like, whoa. And they felt all this heat and they were like,
I can imagine
about it. I'm like, I didn't want to say nothing. I was just like, you guys go on and process this.
Yeah.
Because it is something that is shocking to their system.
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, everybody's like the story I told you about my friend's dad. He was afraid.
Yeah.
Because he was South Vietnamese Army. He left in 75. He'd never been back. This is his first time back. But he longed to go back to the motherland.
Right.
And he goes, look, and he's in his 80s, he wanted to go back. Just to touch and feel the air. Like, that's his thing. And low-key, his kids said, I think he wants to go back there and die. When I say die, live out his days because, you know what I mean?
Old people tell me that.
Yeah,
they,
so.
They want to pass away in Vietnam.
But then again, in his immediate community, he still has that fear. Now, being punished here, he had a fear of being punished there. So they can't live in peace.
Right.
You know, and that's the conversation we're having. Like, that, exactly what he says is our own internal, like, you know, things that we're dealing with. So, and here is a good conversation because we're moving on. We're not trying to forget or like, oh, well, you know, whatever that is, you know what I mean? But, you know, look, my dad's South Vietnamese Army. Okay, let's just put it out there. We came here in 75. We fled. Okay. But at the end of the day, he's always taught me to love Vietnamese people. And that's what I'm going to do. If that's one lesson he told me, okay, when you see other people that are Vietnamese, help them out. And even the people that love Vietnamese people, be good to them. So if that has nothing to do with politics, then I'll just go over that.
Yeah. I mean,
I hope we're not talking about this shit in 10 years.
I don't want to talk about this next year.
Next year. Yeah.
You know, next year, I want a guy from Vietnam in this chair. Let's talk about what we're going to do going forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, on that note, like I said, I feel like I showed up to the meeting late and two sides are bickering. And I'm in the middle like, hey, we're all Vietnamese. We got good food, interesting languages, and this. And both sides are trying to pull me to each side. And to me, it's just like, hey, I don't know. Like I said, even my dad wasn't a part of that. So that's way before my time. I understand, but I'm just here to hang out with Vietnamese here.
Exactly.
Hang out with Vietnamese in Vietnam.
And being at the shop, I get a lot of Vietnamese from other states and they didn't understand that either. And they lived in the US for 30 years. Okay. And when they get here, they get bombarded. Hey, that's not the right one. Or some kid goes, yeah, I went back to Vietnam. I bought a gift and he wore it and he thought he would be proud to come back to his Vietnamese people and wear it. And then he goes, I've never even seen the yellow flag, the stripes, you know what I mean? He goes, and I lived in America. I go, wow, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He goes, I get a lesson, but I feel shame. But I think we should just kind of, I can't say put it to rest. That's just harsh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know, culture-wise, as long as we stay culturally and be about that, I think we'll be fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the pushing of the culture, I mean, what you do here, it's like, you know, Little Saigon, you know, where we came from, Vietnamese. I think pushing that and just sticking with Vietnamese culture in general can help everybody kind of come together.
Yeah, and people ask me, what about it? I go, yeah, that's part of our culture, part of our history. If it wasn't for that, there would not be this. That's straight up. If it wasn't for how that happened, this would not have been.
Right.
Okay, so you have to give that credit to that part of that timeline, that history. But now that we're 51 years in, that has a basis, you know, but is that going to be the thing going forward?
Right.
Okay.
You know, I do want to end with this note. I want everybody in the audience to look at what I'm wearing. And I want everybody to think about the merch. Because the merch that you have designed is high quality. It's really,
I appreciate that, man.
It's high quality gear. But here's the most important thing, though. It's not about right now. What this is about is, I'm actually thinking about this because I don't really, okay, I have a lot of stuff from you. And what happens is this. I actually don't wear it because I don't want it to get old.
Ah.
So this is what I've done. I've actually collected it because I know at one point in history, this merch is going to be worth a lot of money because Little Saigon in 15 or 20 years is going to be a place where people are going to come and people are going to realize the history that you actually put into gear that we can wear. And I hate to say it, I don't think you should buy it and wear it. You should buy it and frame it, and you should buy it and keep it tucked away like a comic book.
Yeah.
Because it's really high quality stuff.
Says a lot.
20 years from now.
I appreciate that. That means a lot. And, you know, I win it because, like, we've been around for 50 years. If you go around Little Saigon, there's not one store sells.
We haven't been proud.
And you know, like, I got my trademark registration 2 years ago. Okay, randomly, guess what date they issued it to me? April 30th.
Mm.
Oh, that's crazy.
But it signifies, I'll go on it a different way, but it triggered me to now go beyond. And because, look, we're a tourist destination. We're a brand in its own self. There's everything that's uniquely this is uniquely this. And we're an extension of Vietnam. Right?
You wouldn't be here if that wasn't the case.
Right? So let's be proud of what the extension is. Yeah. And that way we can build more. And then when people, look, random people not Vietnamese said they, first time they visited Vietnam, and then they discovered there's a small Vietnam in California and in pockets of other states. You know, Vietnam now made them introduce them to Little Saigons of all over the United States. And they come here because of that. So that's why it was important to brand what we have.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful for it.
And yeah, and that's why if you ask me why we do it, we have to have more people that wants to brand themselves and stand on that brand.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I thank you for, you know, giving up your space. I want to do more podcasts in this, you know, use it as a makeshift studio.
Well, I really like the logo.
Oh, you know, man.
I feel like I am in Vietnam sitting in these doing it.
But one thing I'm going to champion, and it's a shameless plug. I have this new thing called Little Saigon Go. Okay.
I used that today. I was looking for different places to eat. I used that.
Because the questions we all have as locals, and wherever you come from, if you go to Florida or that, you go here, everybody who comes here, the first thing they ask is, hey, where's the best of this?
Mm.
Can they, you know, and all these other dishes. And when we do this, and like I was telling you, it's just to go beyond banh mi, pho, and coffee, because there's so many Vietnamese dishes that people need to explore. This is an app that you don't have a homie, you don't have a friend, you don't have an aunt that lives in that particular area to get food. You can go on this app and now they list the top eight. Or if not, and all the other ones are there, but by dish. So if you want to go get the banh can, the can chua, the thit can, you can now just look it up yourself. You don't need a tour guide.
And even if you had a family member who can recommend, you can debate with them now.
Yeah.
Go get my aunt on there.
Yeah, but the problem is when you ask somebody that's local, they only tell you what they're used to.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because they don't go on social media. Yeah. They don't know. So let's have our own community that loves the food, that knows the food, upvote it and say, go. Little Saigon Go, because
Little
Saigon Go, okay?
Little Saigon Go.
Yeah.
Saigon Go. And we can download this from the app.
Yeah. Go eat, enjoy, man. You know what I mean? That's what we want to do. No matter what we do, we go eat, we enjoy, we break bread, have a good conversation, and enjoy ourselves, man. It's just that simple. You know what I mean?
Thank you once again for coming out to hang out with us. Chris, thank you for always being such a gracious host at your Little Saigon official store here at the Asian Garden Mall. Thank you both.
No, and thank you for offering to buy dinner. That's why I came out. Free, I work for food, man.
It is a pleasure to see it all come together because we did a podcast about it. We were talking online forever, and then I came through here. And then, like you said, with the framing, unfortunately, every piece of merch I got was big size. So I got to frame it now. I can't
wait. I'm going to downsize him, but luckily, I made 3X for guys like him. But now he's back down to an L. So, you know, guys.
I don't like football. I sound sick, you know.
It's going to be fabulous.
I like football, Connor.
Or just fuck it.
Thank you, everybody.
Take a bow.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.